From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show. We're on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. We are making it possible, or at least more possible, for entrepreneurs to jump in the game. And in today's show, we're going to have Sadie St. Lawrence, and she is a remarkable woman. She is working on an organization. In fact, she founded an organization called Women in Data. And we're going to share a little bit of her insights around women in data, because right now there are not enough women in data. And so we're going to talk about why, what she's doing about it, and what we can all do to bring women into this emerging occupation. And it is it can be fun. It shouldn't be for just guys, right? And so it's actually beginning to change, but we're going to talk about how it is changing, what else we need to do to redouble our efforts to make it change even faster. And at the end of the show, again, I'm going to touch on our event coming up, GFX. That is a Growth Factories event on August 25th. I'm going to share a little bit more information about that. If you have more interest in being a part of that, please let me know. But in the meantime, stick around. Enjoy Sadie St. Lawrence.
Entrepreneurs are the heroes of the American economy. They take the risks, create the opportunities, and move the molecules. Now, back to the Marquee Media Studio, it's the Mark Haney Show.
And now I'm here with Sadie St. Lawrence. She is the founder and CEO of Women in Data. Today, we're going to be talking about women in data, which is, I guess that's your favorite subject, right? Is that where you're, what is women in data, and how did it get started?
It is my favorite subject, and I will say I'm not a marketer, because when I picked the name, I picked a very descriptive name, right? Nothing fancy. You know exactly what it is, right, when you talk about it. Okay, it's women who work in data, right?
100%. So data, though, is pretty broad. What describe this realm of data? What is working in data?
Yeah, so essentially we've identified about 50 titles today of what it encapsulates working in data, and it's expanding over time. Originally, actually, our name was Women in Data Science and Analytics, and what we realized when we first started out was the roles keep changing and there's adding new ones, right? Mm. There's AI, there's machine learning engineer, there's now machine learning ops, there's data journalists, and we're like, okay, what's the one thing that's consistent between its all of these job titles? It's that you're working with data, mm-hmm. right? So there's a lot of options in terms of what you can do. And whether you have a full-time data career as a data scientist, a machine learning engineer, even if you're not working in one of those roles, most of us interact with data today, right? When we read the news, COVID's a great example of all how we all had to become data professionals and mm-hmm. interpreting charts and monitoring numbers and looking at that. And so where we see things going is really that everyone is going to need to be data literate, so to be able to read, write, and interpret data as we progress in the 21st century and continue to have relevant roles and jobs.
Everybody's going to need that? What describe what you mean by that? Just as a consumer, we need to or anything, we need to be able to understand data?
So I'll give you one example. Farmers, actually. The people you probably wouldn't think, like, oh, people who work in the field need to be data literate. Yes, they do, because I don't know if you've been in a combine recently, but they're more like a robot device, right? Okay. So John Deere is an amazing data company, actually. And what they've done is now all the farming machinery is enabled with AI. And now, as a farmer, when you're driving one of these machines, you're looking at a dashboard that's interpreting your crop, the yield of it, where's the perfect place to plant it. And so even just by being a farmer, you have to look at charts and graphs to interpret the machine you're driving and to be able to get that optimal yield. Mm-hmm. So even areas that probably 20 years ago, right? If I would have mm-hmm. said 20 years ago, a farmer is going to need to be data literate, you would have said I'm crazy. But yeah. In manufacturing, same thing, right? In Amazon warehouses, robots run a majority of it, but now we see humans working with the robots, right? Even in those regards, if you're in manufacturing, you have to have some level of data literacy as well.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Okay, so women in data, you're solving this, I guess, gender gap, if you will. There's less women in data. There's a lot of women in data. There aren't enough women in data. Is that kind of the concept? Is like, let's get more people, more women into these kind of occupations?
Yes. So our mission is to increase diversity in data careers. And where that came from was in 2014, I was transitioning into data science myself. And when I was in my master's program, I was in one of only five master's programs in the U.S. that had started at that time. And there was only one other female in my program. And I was so surprised by this. I just picked this career and pathway because I was interested in it. So when I got there, I was like, where are all the women, right? Mm-hmm. Am I weird? Am I an anomaly? Or like, what is going on with this?
Are you into math? Is that why you chose data? Is that, I mean, because what would make someone, like, why did you choose data? Maybe we'll start there too. What made you choose data?
So I'm not into math, and okay. I have to say that in my ACT, I probably got one of the worst scores. I think I would have got a better, now that I do know more math, I would have got a better score randomly guessing than what I did at that time. So I did actually music, which actually has a lot of math in it. And then I switched from that to psychology and neuroscience. And I was working in a neuroscience lab. Found out I didn't want to euthanize rodents anymore. Went home from the lab and wrote out what parts of my job I like, what I didn't. What I found out I really liked, though, was working with data, analyzing it, the scientific method, etc. And so through a Google search of searching those key relevant terms, right, even the AI was helping me then, led me to the term data science.
Got it. Okay, so you're in the class and only one other female in the class, and how many guys are in there?
There are 30 in that cohort, and then, you know, all my teachers were male as well, okay. Right? So I had one female teacher throughout my program as well.
And when that, so that's it, you're getting your master's at Villanova, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, so you're in a very high-level program, and two out of 30 are women. How does that translate to, so that's at the college level. Mm-hmm. How does that translate to the workforce? Is it similar? Is there those similar type statistics?
Well, thankfully it's changed a little bit, okay. Right? So the equation isn't quite the same. So in data careers in general, we're looking at about 27% are female. And then if you break that out into different subcategories like data science and AI, you're looking at about like 12 to 15%. So, you know, it ranges a bit in that space. And I mean, it is changing, though. That's the positive side of things. And it has changed since 2014 when I first entered the field.
Okay. So with that said, why is it changing, and what's the problem? What's at the root of the problem?
Yeah, so that's a great question.
I guess that's two questions. Huh? Yeah.
Well, let's first talk about the root of the problem, right? So how we've broken it down into women in data is there's three buckets of the problem. One is awareness, the second is access to education, and the third is advancement opportunities. So on the awareness side, I love the quote that says, you can't be what you can't see, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's a perfect description of the awareness of it. I found this through a Google search, right? Mm-hmm. But if I didn't happen to stumble on it, I don't know if I would be in the field. So we need to provide that awareness that this is a career opportunity for women, and it's something that they can do in the place that they belong. So that's part of it.
And can I maybe ask a question? So you said it's awareness, and then it's, what was the second and third one?
The access to education.
Access to education, and then advancement within, okay. What about the early child, you know, the youngster that isn't really deciding what, you're like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Yeah, I've never even heard a guy say data, right? So, but I'm like, is there things that are happening in like at the grammar school level that are key to the problem as well?
Yeah, so, you know, we have a program in Women in Data called Data Curiosity. It's to expose young minds to working with data and interpreting it. So exposure definitely helps. But I also like warn parents a little bit that you don't have to give your kids coding experience at an early age. It is helpful, but just for perspective, when I was a child, even through high school, the term data science didn't even exist yet, right? So I think it's just important to remember that the true jobs of the future are not fully there, right? But what we can do, and I think where it helps with younger children, is opening their minds to critical thinking, to math, the basic skills that we know are not going to change. And then for girls in particular, making sure that what we see around when they enter middle school, where they shy away from math and science, that isn't changing, right? Okay. So I think if we can continue to push that from an early age, that will help a lot in the long run that they're interested into some of these other STEM fields as well.
Okay. Well, sorry for derailing you. Okay, so let's talk about the awareness piece. So
yeah,
you didn't have an awareness of it in 2014. What's happening in terms of awareness now? What are we doing right? What are we doing wrong?
So what we're doing right is that the awareness of this just as a job is out there. And my descriptor of this is how the federal and state and local governments have started to adopt it. Like, to me, once government adopts this as like, this is a job description, we know, okay.
Thank
this
God
is
we here. Have government. I've never heard that before.
It's here to stay, right? It's not just some new trendy fad. They're okay. Like, nope, this is
so
a real thing.
If the government says this is actually going to happen, people are going to start believing it. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, data science has been around for over 10 years now, but just this year, a lot of federal government institutions implemented it as an official job description. You can actually even be a data scientist in the Army. So there's a fun pathway if you want to go down that pathway. But more so, the awareness of the jobs are reaching more people. I think where we still need to make progress is in terms of the representation, right? So again, can't be what you can't see. Okay, I see the job, but maybe I'm not seeing people who look like me in those careers today. Okay. And I think that's where Women in Data really wants to play a role, is to highlight leaders and individuals and people working in the field to say, hey, you can be this person, and here's someone who you may relate to.
Now, yours is Women in Data, but you said your mission was around diversity. Is the primary focus the diversity between men and women, or are you focused on, you know, the other kinds of diversity that might be underrepresented as well?
Yeah, so, you know, we have different values and principles, especially for our local chapters, and the first value is that all are welcome, right? So men are actually welcome in Women in Data. We don't see a high representation. I think our names skews it off.
I saw on your website you have one employee that's a teammate that's a guy.
Yes, he was a brain. So yes, we love allies in Women in Data. So, you know, however you identify, you are welcome in Women in Data. And then we wanted to broaden it just from our mission, from just saying that we're supporting gender diversity in this space, to diversity as a whole, right? Because even within women, right, Black women are only represented 3% in the industry, and Latinas, it's around 6%. So we want to make sure that we're not looking at it just from a gender side, but looking at it overall as well.
Which ethnic category is probably most represented within women? Is it white? Is it Caucasian? Or is it Asian? Or I don't know, Middle Eastern?
Yeah, so within the field, we see about an equal representation between Caucasian and Asian people. Okay. And then from there, it breaks down. So those two categories take up the majority of it. And then there's about a 10% sliver left for everybody else.
Gotcha. Okay, so on the awareness piece, well, so what are you doing on the awareness piece? What does Women in Data do? I know you do speaking, and you know you're very, very well known in the industry. But like, maybe give us a kind of an example of what that looks like.
Yeah. So for me personally, even before I went full time with Women in Data, I got asked to teach on the Coursera platform with UC Davis to teach a data science class. And it was not a good time in my life to teach. I was running Women in Data, working another full-time job, but I had never experienced a female data science teacher before. And I just felt like it was important for me to have that representation. And I'm very happy I did, because the class now has, there have been 400,000 people who have taken the class.
Wow.
So the representation has had an impact, which is very exciting. And then it it was such a great example of what happens when you allow one person to have that representation, because it ended up becoming a series, and the rest of the teachers were also female in that series.
That must be like an online course that you take through Coursera, so anybody around the country or around the world could take that class, but it's through UC Davis.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, so thankfully it is online. I don't know how I would quite do in person, and that is the power of building online products, the power of scale there. So that's for me personally, but from Women in Data's side, you know, we work as one global network, but then we also, where communities are aggregated and people want to step up and lead, we have chapters. So we have chapters in over 50 cities across the world where they're highlighting people in their community who are leading the way, who are practitioners in the field, who are interested in this subject. And then we also do a lot from a global perspective with global webinars and podcasting, mm-hmm. all the great things.
Yes. Okay. So on the awareness piece, I've got an idea of that. Now, the next piece is around education.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So once you get some awareness of like, hey, I think this may be a career path for me, or I think this is something that what we see common now is I can transition into, right? But then you probably go through one of the similar things I did was like, okay, I have some of the skills, but I'm missing, you know, I have some gaps in the other skills. So where we, because we are focused mainly on women, and a lot of them have already graduated college or are already in a career, we need to have access points to education that can be part-time, mm-hmm. right? So they can continue to have families and work and life, etc. But also to make sure it's curated in a way that leads them to a path to their end goal. So today we have amazing products like Coursera and edX and, you know, a lot of continuing education programs. But what we're seeing is it's like entering a library before there was the Dewey Decimal System, right? And before you had librarians to help point you to the right book. So what Women in Data looks to do is to curate pathways for people where we provide that education, but in a learning pathway where there's a target in career goal at the end.
Okay, interesting. So what? So walk me through what that looks like. So I'm a woman working for, you know, I got a regular job, but boy, I would love to transition, make a mm-hmm. transition into more something around data. Do they come to you, and what happens?
Yeah, so we have a variety of learning pathways. Let's say you want to be a data analyst. You can sign up to be, go on the data analyst track. It's a 1 year track that you do part time. It's every 2 months, and then you get a month off, and you work into small cohorts of 10 people. So we're big fans of social learning and mm-hmm. learning from your peers. And so you take the classes online at your own time, but then meet weekly with your cohort to review the materials, ask questions, etc. By the time you're done with that, there's 4 modules in it. By the time you're done with it, you've taken 12 classes. And so you have the foundational skills. However, what we're seeing in the job market today is education alone isn't enough to get you into that first job or that job pivot. What you really have to do is show that you have the skills. And in a technical field and in a data career, you do this through building out a portfolio. So once you're done with that learning pathway, you go on to a portfolio builder class where you build out projects to show the work that you've done and to be able to talk about it as you go into different employment opportunities.
And that is something you guys do in-house, or you do that in conjunction with certain partnerships?
We do that in-house. So we have a variety wow. of, you know, classes we've developed and teachers that we have in-house. And then we also do partner with Data Camp as well.
Okay. And so they come out, do they get a certification? Is that kind of part of that portfolio that they build is something they can take to an employer? Is that kind of the idea?
Yep. So you get a certification. We're also working on tokenizing the certifications as well. So not only will you have the paper certification, but you'll have an NFT that represents it as well.
That's cool. So cutting edge.
Yeah. So making sure that they're ready for Web3 when we all transition mm-hmm. over to that. But then, you know, really what's most important is that portfolio that they build themselves. So the education is great, but showing their own work and being able to talk about the problems that they solved, that is where they stand out to employers.
Like, what would be an example of like a project or something that would be in somebody's portfolio?
Yeah, so for me personally, I really love fashion and style. So in my portfolio and even in the classes I teach, I always do things around the fashion industry. Mm-hmm. So I personally, just even last night, I was researching the company Shine because they have one of the best AI models and they are killing the game in retail. So for me, what I would probably do as a project would be to look at all of the retail providers, right? Scrape data off the web in terms of, maybe I want to look at the, maybe my question and problem is like, who's been performing the best over the last, you know, 5 years? And can I build a predictive model for the next 5 years of who's going to be performing the best and where?
And performing the best, when you're talking about like which retailer or which manufacturer?
Which retailer, okay. Right? And so, and also, can I predict who will be for the next 5 years, right? And are there factors from that prediction then that I can use to determine why one's performing better or why one isn't? And then as an entrepreneur, I would use that model and say, okay, here are the indicators of what makes a company successful. I want to take those indicators and now I'm going to replicate those some way in my business, right?
Okay, that's really cool. So they come away with this portfolio and they take that to get the job that they want. So you're helping solve that problem, obviously. How many people go through your classes? Do you track that?
Yeah, so last year we had 2,000 people go through this.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Wow, life's changing. On the job front, you mentioned the third piece of this is...
Advancement.
And why aren't women advancing, and is it because there's just not enough of them there, or is there discrimination? What's the problem?
So we've actually started to make some good progress, and I shouldn't say just women in data, you know, there's a lot of wonderful women's organizations out there, and this is the beauty of data. We can start to identify that root cause. And we see a really pivotal point at age 35 and what I call the 5 years of doom leading up to that. So if you combine the factors of when you should move into, when you typically move into a management position from an individual contributor position in your career, it's usually around the age 30 to 35. At the same time, when we combine the data of when women are having children, it's around that same time as well. So you have two things that are lining up in a timing wise in your time series model, right? And what we're seeing as a big problem is that women are not getting opportunities to move into a leadership position. It usually takes them a few years longer than it does for their male counterparts.
Yeah.
When that happens and then you take some time off to have a kid, going back in, you're starting back even further, right? And so for a lot, they're saying, hey, is this something that I even want to stay into? So that's a problem. At the same time, there is discrimination. So if you've taken some time off, or even if you haven't, or you're struggling to move into that leadership position, you know, it gets tiring, right? And so you start looking out and say, are the grasses going to be greener on the other side? Maybe if I wasn't working on a team where I'm, you know, one of two or three females and was working on a more representative team, I'd have more opportunities, right? Mm-hmm. So that just overall, after having about 10 years in the career in this, you're pretty exhausted, right? So there needs to be a lot of work done to support individuals, especially at that pivotal point in helping to move into that first leadership
position.
Well,
yeah, women are going to continue to have babies. We're probably not going to be able to attack that problem. What can be done? I mean, I suppose it's an awareness even within that, within the the executive suite might not even be tracking that sort of thing. But what are you doing, and what can we do? You know.
Yeah. So a lot comes to what we reward in business environments, right? So a lot of times we're rewarding things of, you know, what we call confidence, right? Or being, you know, assertive. Unfortunately for women, what being assertive is called for men is being bossy for women, right? So
why are you like that?
I know. I know, right? Why is the world like that? Why can't we have it a positive, a both sides of the thing?
It's not the first time I've heard this. It's not just data that this is exists, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think we can learn a lot from other industries because it's not just in, you know, a STEM field or a technical field. A lot of other industries suffer from this. So I think it's changing our perspectives in business cultures of what that looks like. The other portion of it is also making sure that they have the right mentors and support. So if your leadership team isn't very diverse right now, you know, there's a caution sometimes too from, you know, finding a mentor from another gender, right? And how that's going to look in someone. And so making sure that those people in those positions have the right support.
I would agree with that because as a guy, older guy, you know, we don't want to put ourselves in a position that something might be taken the wrong way or whatever. So, hell, my gosh, I got to have a woman with me if I'm going to be in a job. You know, you got to have diversity on my team. If I'm going to go in a closed door meeting with a female, you know, that's kind of it can be a challenge in terms of just concerns for even for the guys, even. I don't mean to make excuses, but I think that sometimes we're also maybe shyer around that scenario too, and probably vice versa.
Yeah, I think it's calling it out that like that is a real concern. Like there's a lot of men and women who would probably be great pairs together in a mentor-mentee relationship, and they may not have any ill intentions. Most don't. But unfortunately, there's a lot of concern of what the public consensus and perception of that's going to be. And I've actually experienced that in my own environment. I mean, I had fabulous mentors early on in my career, but that didn't stop the company culture from saying, you know, nasty rumors of saying other things that may be happening, right?
I'm mentoring a female now. Hopefully nobody's saying, you know, because we're in the growth factory. We're helping startups, and I happen to be mentoring a female, which is unlike me. You know, I've never really been a mentor before, but I raised my hand and I ended up getting this great young entrepreneur, but she's a female. And I made sure my family was in her, you know, they know her really well and all that. So it's like, okay. And, you know, so there's no concerns. But but if it wasn't this particular person, I would be walking on eggshells a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, I mean, even you took precautions, right? So I think one is just understanding, like, we have to do a lot to reduce that stigma, right? And then there's an interesting neuroscience fact, because you're talking about, you know, how do we support women moving into these positions faster? So women's brains actually mature faster than men's brains.
No way.
Yes. Right? So I look at that and say, okay, so if this is true, right, and it's a very important part.
Some of us never even mature all the way. It takes a long time.
And it's the frontal cortex, right? So reasoning, decision-making, logic, that matures much faster. So if we take that and actually take the science, could we use that to actually propel women faster into these positions, right? So that they're in a higher position faster where they can use all of that cognitive ability. And then maybe they have a longer likelihood of staying and coming back.
Okay, so you lost me on that. That's how immature my brain is. So you're saying use data to change this?
Yes.
Can you walk me through that just a little slower? Because you lost me on that. Sorry.
Yeah. So let's say we have two employees. They're both 25 years old. They've just started off in the company. One is male and one is female, right? Right now, we know that the female, based on neuroscience, probably most likely has a more developed frontal cortex and higher cognitive ability, right at that age. How do we feed that female so that she can grow and move into that leadership position? What I'm going to quote unquote say faster, right? In reality, we know that men usually get promoted faster, right? But use that advantage of the cognitive ability early on to fast track women into those positions.
And you said feed her. That would be, what would that look like?
Yeah, so what we see is a lot of times women aren't getting those growth opportunity projects, right? Mm-hmm. So in order to have, you know, your peers in the leadership team say this person's ready to lead, oftentimes they need to see that you have led a project, right? And you have that ability. So it's giving someone that opportunity to showcase those skills.
Interesting. So this is going to sound a little sexist, so I apologize to you or our viewers. So, but I'm stereotyping, or you know, just having being old and having known a lot of worked with a lot of men and women, have hundreds of employees and stuff. Women, by and large, maybe it's because of the more mature brain, they tend to get more stuff done, right? They accomplish a lot. By and large, not saying guys don't, but and so I'm wondering, and this I'm forming this into a question: is it because they accomplish a lot of tasks, since they just get a lot of stuff done, that they aren't handed the maybe the broader leader piece that maybe doesn't have to get as much work done?
So I don't have hard scientific evidence on this, but I do have a few theories for why this is happening. And you're right. I mean, even within women in data, we see people who are more educated, right, are able to accomplish more, get more tasks done, right? But I think we need to look at what the root cause of that and where it stems from. Where it stems from, if you're in an environment where there's not equal representation of you, you feel like you have to work harder to show that you belong, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and especially in a technical environment, there's this feeling that, you know, of imposter syndrome, or somebody's gonna find out. So I need to work harder to really show that I know my stuff and have these skills, okay, right? The problem with that though, then, is unfortunately a lot of people get promoted from a network-based model, right? Which is how well you know people, mm-hmm, in the leadership level, how well you've promoted your own personal brand. But if you're over here trying to just prove yourself on a technical side, it's really hard to have that freedom to go out there and to network and to promote your personal brand, because you're still in the mindset of like, I don't belong in this environment.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Okay. So what are you guys doing to change that? How are you, you know, attacking that problem?
Yeah. So we have an executive data leadership forum. So we want to make sure for the women who are in C-suite positions that they have the support they need, because there are very few of them, but we want to make sure that we don't lose any of them and they feel supported and stay. And so we peer them into groups and they meet on a quarterly basis to discuss different thought leadership topics, whatever the group decides there. And then we're getting ready to launch an emerging leaders program as well, to make sure that we're doing the coaching and support there. And then on an ad hoc basis, we have two support methods. First is life coaching. And so this again is to really support on that confidence level, taking those risks, right? Helping women just in and of themselves feel that confidence to step up and lead to that next level. And then we also have a mentorship program. So this is where, if you don't have a mentor, as we talked about, there's, mm-hmm, there's a big problem. We help find one for you and solicit a program that will lead you through a 6-month mentorship program.
Okay. And thinking about, so if we're at 12% to 24% now of women that have these data jobs, what's the goal? Is it 50%? Is that a realistic goal? Or is that, how do you approach a, you know, kind of a question? Like, you want to have a goal that's possible.
Yeah, well, I really love looking at gender statistics, because it's the same across wherever you live, right? So whatever country you're in.
Yeah, women are like 50 plus, over 50%, aren't you?
They just tap over just a little bit, but it's usually 50-50, okay, you know, no matter what country you're in. So obviously that would be equal representation. However, a big threshold is actually at a 30% mark. So you want to be, and this is for leaders or people who are creating teams, you want to have a 30% at minimum representation, because it has been found through science that at 30% representation, people have a feeling of belonging, which allows them to speak up for others, be able to advocate for themselves, and really be their true self in the environment.
I've heard that you know, because if you look at the Silicon Valley and the way a lot of these tech companies have been built, let's call it, you know, Facebook or some of the others, that it's been built mainly by guys. And so the algorithms and the way the things work are almost from, because it was built by predominantly males, that it's skewing the way those businesses even analyze customer data and so on. Can you talk about that? Am I off base in that?
No, you're not. So especially we see this a lot with computer vision. So if you're talking about AI models, mm-hmm. right, where essentially it didn't recognize people of color, one, mm-hmm. and it also misidentified women a lot as well. And that was just because not only is it not represented from the people building it, but then in the data set, right, what they're using to train the model wasn't represented either.
It recognized nerds, though, right?
Yeah, the guys very well.
Sorry to all you computer people out there, but, you know, it's kind of the image that we have is the guy, computer nerdy guy, you know, basically building these really cool toys.
And then when you go to test out your really cool toy, who do you test it on? You test it on yourself, probably, yeah. right? And then you test it on your buddy. You know, you test it on who's in your network, right? And that's really a problem we see overall. And when companies are being formed, you know, you are at such a high level of risk when you hire someone new. So normally you hire someone within your network because you have a lot of trust with that mm-hmm. person, right? But unfortunately, our networks aren't very diverse, right? We tend to gravitate towards people who are like ourselves. And so then it just perpetuates the problem further and further.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so thinking about this, what are the emerging... Well, I'll have two more questions around this, and maybe we'll talk startups a little bit too. So, okay, so the jobs of the future, we touched on that a little bit, that they haven't been identified yet, but you're cutting edge, you're in the trenches. Like, what do you think the biggest opportunity, you know, the jobs are going to be really great for in data that maybe I can't imagine yet because I'm not a data person?
Yeah, so where most predictions go out for the future jobs are about 5 years. And the report I love is the World Economic Forum's jobs report. I read it back in 2015 and they predicted out 5 years and they were very accurate with that. And now I've read the new one in 2020. And so it's looking at until 2025, what are the jobs of the future? In the top 10 jobs of the future, three of them are data-related careers. So data scientists and analysts, machine learning engineers and AI specialists, and then big data engineers, so like cloud architecture and stuff. So it sounds terrible when I say the number one job of the future is in a data career, because I'm not biased here, but unfortunately the data actually also does say that. I feel very fortunate and lucky that I landed in this career very early on, because I don't think even in 2014 I was able to predict that. So definitely data jobs are the
future. These are high paying jobs. Where does somebody start when you get one of these jobs? Are these six figures to start, and how high, what's average?
Yeah, so if you're starting out as an analyst, it's around, you know, 70 to 100,000, right? Once you get into data science.
And is this working for like a big company, or could be any company?
This could be pretty much any company.
Okay.
And then once you get into data science, you're looking at over 100,000, 100, 150. Then you get into machine learning engineer, ML ops. Then you're looking at the over 150. Now that's excluding FANG companies, right? Those prices you can, you know, kind of 10x it, right? Because mm-hmm. They're always looking for top talent in this space. But just generally speaking, across the board, you have a...
And there's a big shortage of this kind of talent right now. So is the shortage expected to, if those are going to be the top jobs of the future, what are we going to see in terms of that pay should escalate, right? Supply and demand. If those jobs are in such demand, that's why we pay them so much, or part of the reason.
Yeah. So I think the pay is going to continue to increase. It's estimated that 85 million jobs in the next 5 years are going to be automated. However, there's going to be 97 million jobs available because of the work in automation, mm-hmm. right? So if you're scared, my recommendation to people, if you're scared of automation taking your job, sometimes you just got to join the other team.
Right? Yes,
and
yes.
So, and the great part about that is there's more opportunity on that side of things. And the pay is usually higher too.
And it's probably going to be more interesting than putting groceries in the bag. If there's a machine doing it for you and you're running the machine, it seems like it would be more interesting than, you know, doing it yourself. Okay, so that was one of my questions. I lost. What else do we want to, in terms of women and data, what else did I not cover? Because I want to make sure I round that out for you so that you can, in case there's something I missed, because I jumped around a little bit.
Yeah, I think the big thing is really just how much value we've seen by just creating a community, right? So we talked a little bit about network models and how a lot of hiring that is done today is based on your network, and how women in tech roles particularly and then in data roles do not have that equal representation. And by being a part of Women in Data, you get to connect with other people, but more importantly, it's just been incredible to see the knowledge sharing, the support that happens. And I think the power of Women in Data is not in the programs or anything we do. It's in the community. It's in the people that connect with one another, who volunteer in programs, who go and start chapters. That really is the heart and the power and the soul. And that to me is where we're going to be able to change things, with the individual people connecting and supporting one another.
What about the cultures within a larger organization? Are there sort of communities built, like you mentioned the FANG stock, so let's talk Google. I mean, are there communities getting built within Google to approach this kind of problem?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of organizations are supporting D&I efforts and have a focus on making sure that their hiring is more diverse. And a lot of organizations also have groups that they're like resource groups for different subgroups within the organizations. And all of those are great. Like, I would say continue to do those. However, the problem is if you have a complaint with your organization, you're part of one of these subgroups at this organization, you may still feel a little bit limited within your power. So it's always, you know, whoever we are, it's always great to expand our network of people, right? Mm-hmm. There's never been a time in my life that I was like, oh, this was a real negative from expanding my network and meeting new people, right? The only positive things can come from that.
So we really need to change the culture of the organization, really, to make so that people feel empowered to go change it.
Yes, unfortunately, that's where it always starts, right?
Yeah.
Which is much easier said than done. You know, even a lot of organizations are working to become more data-driven, and they buy the fanciest tools and technology and try and hire, you know, the best people. But unfortunately, if you don't change the culture of the organization as a whole, even becoming data-driven as an organization is not going to happen.
Okay, and so the other question just came to mind. So you mentioned Web 3.0. You've thrown out terms like machine learning. But I mean, which sectors of the job market are most people, what's trending right now is like really fun and hot, and like what's attracting people?
Yeah, so definitely there's a lot of people moving into cryptocurrencies, mm-hmm. and blockchain. I mean, you're seeing it just from, if you look at, you know, the previous founders in Silicon Valley, right? A lot of them have even left being founders and now are building rocket ships or, you know, mm-hmm. Creating blockchain companies. So that's definitely still a trend. However, I would say for the average person, it still comes down to machine learning, mm-hmm. and data science. Like, data science really is kind of the gateway for a lot of people. I mean, even yesterday I watched a YouTube video from, it's called Silicon Valley Girl. Highly recommend her YouTube.
It's
a YouTube channel.
Okay.
And so she does a lot on trends and just shared a new video on the top 10 jobs of the future.
Silicon Valley Girl. Okay.
Yeah. And so even in her top 10 jobs review, again, I'm not trying to be biased, but her number one was still machine learning and data science.
Interesting. Okay. So with that, let's pivot the conversation a little bit over to my favorite subject, which is entrepreneurship. And really, I'm focused today predominantly on startups. And I saw you at a Growth Factory event the other day, and I heard a rumor that you might be raising your hand to help us a little bit with our, for those of you that are maybe just tuning in for the first time to the show, is like, we have something called the Growth Factory, which is a startup accelerator and an accompanying venture fund, and what we're calling the Backyard Advantage. And the Backyard Advantage really is some of the smartest, most connected people in the region that get it, right? That want to help the most promising startups as well, and they want to join our community and help get that done. And I heard a rumor that you might be somebody that was thinking about doing that or are doing that.
Yes, definitely. I'm excited to be a mentor in this cohort. And I love giving back to startups because, you know, women in data is still, we very much talk in our company culture like we're still a startup, right? Mm-hmm. We're a very small team of people. And I kind of fell into it. It all grew organically. And then it started being like, I actually think this would be something I would do full time. And then it became full time, and then had to figure that out and figure out, oh, now I need more of a team of people. And I had to figure out, how do you go from being a 1-2 person team to hiring more people and scaling a business? And I'm still learning every day, but the things that I have learned in the past 6-7 years, I love sharing whatever I can with people. And I think more importantly, I always learn so much from mentoring. I love the quote that says, to teach is to learn. Mm-hmm. And I think it really comes when people ask you questions that cause you to think about things in a new way. So I don't look at mentorship as like one person who is better than the other, but really as a symbiotic relationship, right? Because I think everyone has a story to tell and something to teach and something to learn. And so if we all come in with that mindset, there's a lot of power that can happen through that.
I agree. And you're also, so thank you for coming in as a mentor. And you mentioned one advisory board that you're on with one of what happens to be one of our portfolio companies. Is that something you do, is help startups from an advisory capacity as well, beyond the open grants that we talked about?
Yeah. So, you know, I ran Women in Data in parallel with working as a data scientist and then as an AI strategy consultant. And as much as I hammered that this is the number one job for everyone, what we also see is most new companies have some facet of AI within their business, right? They're usually creating a digital company. And so if you have a digital company, you're collecting data and you have digital information. And then you go, what can I do with this? Or how can I use AI and machine learning to make my product better? And so for me, like I don't want to let all that experience go to waste. So I really enjoy working with startups, especially from that technical aspect, but then also just from what I've learned from growing women in data as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so only have a few minutes left. I just want to make sure that I like to ask questions about just kind of getting general advice. So our audience might be a parent of a college student. It might be an entrepreneur, a startup. It could be a venture capitalist. But maybe we'll take the entrepreneurial side of it, or the parent that's got a college student, because the college student's probably not listening. Maybe. But like, maybe just advice for maybe how to approach their ambition to get going in data, and how to move toward that job, and then maybe anything to a startup founder that they might want to hear as well.
Okay, so I'll break it up into two categories. One for the parent who's encouraging the kid, and then mm-hmm. the startup. So for the parent, I mean, you're just at a disadvantage if you have a kid in college, because they aren't going to listen to
you. Too late.
They're lost. I'm just going to let you
let
know
go.
Now.
Just right? Let go.
You're not cool.
You're not relevant.
And they probably won't listen to you, right?
That's awesome.
So I don't have a lot of advice there. But if you want to try, you know, I would say find things that they're interested in, which let's say it's TikTok, right? And everybody talks about the TikTok algorithm, right? Well, maybe you find a really cool article that actually breaks down how it's created. I actually got to interview somebody who worked on the data science team from TikTok and had amazing things to share on the data they collect.
All right,
and
what
analyze.
If you're a parent of your kid, he's still, or she is still listening. Maybe that's 11, right? You're the parent of an 11-year-old. Yeah. Let's take it there. What advice would you give to the parent of an 11-year-old, knowing that they probably are demonstrating the kind of aptitude that might be really perfect for data?
Well, I would tell them to find Women in Data's Data Curiosity Program and have them join that.
Nice.
The other thing I would say is help them to see and recognize that data is all around them and that they're actually creators of data, right? So just helping point out, like, when you use your phone, right, you're creating data, because we all actually need a lot more education on the digital trail we're continually creating and leaving. So I think just opening up that awareness, you know, in the data curiosity for 12-year-olds, one of the things they do is have them start categorizing things. And so they categorize like toys and Legos and different things that are in their environment, and showing like how you can take, you know, regular objects in life and convert them to data, or how you use a phone and the data is automatically being created for you. Mm-hmm. So okay. I think the awareness side is big on that age.
Okay, that's really helpful. I have a granddaughter that's that age. and then let's speak to the entrepreneur.
Yes.
Some words of wisdom, encouragement. You can do it.
Yeah, so this one's really hard because I see a lot of entrepreneurs who know this is something that they need to add into their product. But then if they hire a technical team, or even in the early days, you maybe outsource and contract some people, a lot of these projects fail because there is no translator between the technical team and the business side of things. And so I think it's important to understand that even if you aren't big enough to have, you know, that translator, somebody who understands your business and who also understands how AI works, then you have to do some of your own education, right? So there are, just to be able to, you don't have to have enough education to be able to build the product, but it's to be able to translate to your technical teams the business problem you're trying to solve, so that they can translate that into an actual AI model that will be useful for you.
Okay, so get a translator. What is that translator? That translator is it's very technical, but they understand business.
Yeah, so one of the things that we see, unfortunately, a lot on the technical side is people have spent a lot of time learning how to build an NLP model or computer vision model. And so they know how to code it, but they don't actually think beyond that in terms of, like, how is this going to be implemented into the product, into the app, etc. And that's actually just as important, if not more important. Additionally, that's the implementation side. I should have started before, which is on the building side. A lot of times you're using data from the business, from the product, whether that be from your website, your app, you know, if your biomarkers and sensors that you have. So really understanding how that product works is going to be helpful when you're looking at the data that is produced from that product, right? Mm-hmm. That will save your technical team hours and hours. And if you're paying for that, you want to be saving that time, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Sadie, I think you're changing the world, so thank you. But thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for helping us with the Growth Factory. Thank you in advance. You know, Sacramento's lucky to have you.
I'm lucky to be here, so happy to be on the show and be a mentor, and excited for what the future holds.
Thank you.
Now, let's get Mark's perspective and closing thoughts from today's show. We're back to the Marquee Media Studio. It's the Mark Haney Show.
Welcome back to the Mark Haney Show. Great show. Sadie is a wealth of knowledge, and she is going to be sharing her insights with the founders at the Growth Factory. And, you know, it's people like Sadie rallying around the most promising startups that really can make a huge impact on our local economy. And even if we just help one entrepreneur, we get a sense of satisfaction by helping people. And so that's really what the Growth Factory is all about. And we are going to have our big event. It's called GFX. It's on August 25th in Roseville at the grounds. There's going to be hundreds of people there. We're going to be bringing on venture capitalists besides me and entrepreneurs, all shapes and sizes. And we're going to be talking about how we can all work together to help one another. Again, it's August 25th. It is called GFX. If you want more info, hit me up on social media at The Mark Haney. And then to all you out there, they're fighting the good fight for our entrepreneurship, and all you fighting the good fight out there for our freedom, our security, and our way of life, and the 13 stripes and the 50 stars into that one American dream that's always worth fighting for, yours. Never above you, never below you, always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.